Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast that talks about needlework stuff.
And people who play with needles, because you forgot that part.
Yes. And our guest this week, returning from the very first week that we did the very first Fiber Talk, Debbie Raleigh. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Gary. Hi, Christine.
Hi.
Glad to have you back. Though we did have you back for the mystery retreat thing. This is, you know, this is official return as a guest here. So,
well, I am delighted that you found me interesting enough to have me on again.
Absolutely.
Yes, definitely.
So, right. So I was saying to Debbie earlier, as soon as we were, you know, right before we were starting, after the very first podcast, I had not done any kind of needlework like this since I was a child. So after the conversation, the first chart that I bought was the Diamond Delights 10, which now everybody says, oh my goodness, that's the first thing you picked up. And we've gone through whether or not that was crazy. That's a conversation for another day, but that's what I did. And so from the very beginning, podcast number one to today, as we, do this podcast, I'm doing the very last stitch around the border. So somewhere during this conversation, I will tell you that Diamond Delight 10 is done. My very first piece is complete.
Yay!
So I'm so excited. I have learned so many things, and so many things that are, hey, that's really cool, I never knew how to do that, and hey, I hope I never have to do that again, and, you know, things that, you know, I
jeez.
Lots of, you know, lots of different, so this is the thing, people, and Gary and I have talked about this, and I'll tell you now, people think that this is a crazy starting piece, and I completely disagree, because it has everything in it. It has so many different types of stitches, and it has so many different types of fibers that the opportunity to learn here is immense. I guess there's benefit to doing one stitch over and over and over again for many hours until you get it perfect. But here I got to try a little bit of everything and see what things I was good at, what things I could pick up quickly, what things I really had to struggle with, what fibers are easy, what fibers are difficult, what things I liked, what things I didn't. So as a learning piece, as an experience piece, it was tremendous because I got to try so many different things. And, you know, I'll take pictures. And what I had said was I'll take one picture of the whole thing, but then I'm going to take pictures of individual pieces. And what I want people to do is to shred it literally and say, all right, this was done well. And this was, yeah, you totally missed it. Because that's, you know, I have this whole benefit of so many people that can say, you know, the way you did this was not right. You should have done this, or take a look at this. This is an example of what it should have looked like. So it's the learning of the piece is not done now that the piece is complete. So to me, this was the perfect beginning piece. So I really, and it was fun. It was really fun to stitch because the colors are pretty. The fibers are pretty. I really had a great time.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. And, you know, you bring up an interesting point, and I always tell people, you need to stitch what you enjoy stitching. You need to stitch with colors that you like.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't like them, if you're not excited about the project, you won't pick up the needle.
Right.
And, you know, so you have to be excited about the project, excited about the threads that you're working on, and it doesn't matter. I mean, I've had rank beginners. Hot Stuff is like one of my very first counted canvas designs. And I taught that as a class, and one of the students had never done anything like that before. And this is a fairly large piece, and it's got a lot of stuff in it with a lot of different threads and a lot of different stitches and double fan doubled and several different and Jessicas and lots of things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she was having so she was so engrossed in what she did. The class was on a Saturday. She was so engrossed in what she was doing that she didn't go to bed, she didn't feed her family, and she had the piece finished.
Wow.
So basically stitched it in 2 days because she was just, she was learning and she was happy with what she was doing. and basically told her family, go away, don't bother me, you know where the
is. She's encouraging independence and independent thought. I'm very much in favor of that. I like that.
Yes, exactly. And so, you know, I always tell people, you know, they ask me, well, do you think this design would be too hard? And I ask them, do you like this design?
Yeah. I agree. I have the same sort of approach to it, because the hardest design is the one that you dread.
Exactly. Exactly. Because I don't particularly like the color yellow, and I have to force myself to stitch with yellow threads. And when I've done a couple of projects that were yellow, I did Glitz and Glamour Citrine, which is all yellow. There is nothing else in it but yellow. And I just had to force myself to stitch. I liked the stitches. I liked the threads. I just couldn't get past the color.
Mm-hmm.
It took me a lot of effort to stitch that model and to get it done, and because of the color.
And that always is fascinating to me, because whenever that one pops up, somebody stitched it, it really is stunning. And everybody comments because it really stands out. And you know, to know that you barely got yourself through it is kind of funny.
Well, and there's, you know, another design that I did called Tahiti Triangles. And it's again, massive piece. And lots of different stitches, lots of different threads. And the way I had laid it out, the first row of squares in it was yellow.
Yeah.
And I hated it. Hated this design. I absolutely despised it. Now, I loved it when I got down to the blue row and the purple row and the green row. I was really happy with it then. But the whole time I was stitching with these yellow threads, I was thinking, nobody's going to buy this design. I don't know why I'm wasting my time. This is horrible.
But I think we need to get you glasses, like tinted glasses, because then you can stitch in yellow, but you'll be enjoying yourself because it'll just look black at the time, right? Yeah. So you can just trick yourself. You can trick your eye while you're stitching.
Yeah, well, that might be an option. But, you know, I don't know when I will be stitching with yellow again, because
what is your most popular design? What has sold the most through the years?
Well, probably Tropical Punch.
Oh, I can see that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And closely followed by Tahiti Triangles.
Whether you like it or not.
And, you know, people do it in all different colors, which is great. I love to see what people do. And they finish it in different ways. And this particular design, I stitched on 18-count canvas. But because of the threads that I used, it would translate to 24-count Krongers cloth. And so, you know, you just use fewer strands. And instead of watercolors, you would use wildflowers. And a lot of people have enjoyed doing it smaller size on Congress cloth. So, you know, and it's an interesting design. It's 36 squares, and each square is a different stitch, stitched with a solid color and stitched with the variegated thread. So you can see how the stitch would look in the solid color and then in the variegated thread. And I alternated the squares from a satin stitch square, then the next square would be a textured square, and then satin stitch, and then textured, and then satin stitch, and then textured. And so, you know, the whole piece was like that. And so, you know, I think people like that design because it's a lot of different stitches, and they can see, okay, this is how, if I use a variegated thread, this is what it'll look like. If I use a solid color, this is what it'll look like.
Now that sounds like a really good either teaching or learning piece as well, because if you don't have a lot of experience with those, it's a good way to get a lot of experience, especially with things just side by side, because how often do you get to see something in a similar color in a satin and a variegated right next to each other, where you can really get a feel for the impact of the difference in the thread choice.
Yeah, and I think that may be one reason why people liked that design. And there were a fair number of shops that taught it. And the fact that all of the squares were 2 by 2 inches, so, you know, 6 in a row, just gives you an idea of how massive this thing was. Mm-hmm. Some shops would take one square and do one square and finish it as a needle book, where they would do three or four and finish them as a block. And so, you know, it was very versatile and really easy for a shop, for a retailer and their class teacher to take it to show people how to do some of the different things. And they didn't have to do it as a whole unified project. They could just pull out two squares at a time or whatever.
Do you get people doing that to your pieces very often, pulling out sections and making a piece out of a portion of it?
Not that I hear about. I wouldn't object to it, but, you know, I don't hear about that as much. Although in my class that I taught at ANG, my four-day class, there is a six-layered Jessica. So it winds up being
a six-layered Jessica.
Yes. I mean, and it starts off with a little bitty Jessica in the center, and then there's another one around it and another one around it until at the end, in the instructions, I told them it would take 756 inches of thread to stitch. Not to stitch with that long a piece of thread, because it would be way too frustrating, but that's how much it would take. And so one of the students in the class said she had an idea for something, but she needed a great big Jessica to put in it. And so she was really excited because she was going to take the Jessica from my design to use for her project.
Hmm. Okay. Yep. 750. Jeez.
Pitched in pearl cotton, because pearl cotton is non-divisible, and you get like quite a bit of it on the ball. So you don't want to use a really expensive thread that is going to take 18 reels of Krynek to stitch this one, right. Jessica.
No. And pearl cotton's pretty cooperative.
Oh yeah. Pearl cotton's great to stitch with.
It really is. As I was going through this piece, you know, you'd stitch with something that was a little bit ornery, and then I'd turn the page and it'd be pearl cotton, and I'd say, oh God, I get a relaxing day now. You know, I know it's going to be okay.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and you know, there are tricks for every thread. And
yes.
With pearl cotton, it's essential that you don't use too long a length.
Mm-hmm.
Because it will degrade. And by the time you get to the end of the length, and then you start a new length, you can tell a real difference in the quality of the thread from the last stitch that you did and then the first stitch that you did with the new thread.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's one of the things about this that's been good for me is that, again, I would never – so I would have this judged just for the exercise, but I would never have it judged expecting a good result because I can look at it and say, okay – I can see where I learned things, you know, where you started out and said, it's a little shaky, but you can see how it improved as things went on. And really it was about learning about all these different threads, because when I, you know, again, the last time I did this was 30, 40 years ago, where there weren't all, it was, you were stitching with DMC cotton, the end, that was it. Mm-hmm. So you didn't have to deal with, you know, threads raveling and, you know, dimensional threads where it's like, you know, like neon rays, or I have another less favorite thread now. I forget what it's called. Where you really have to worry about laying the threads down or fraying or all of those things. So, you know, now I'm at the stage where, okay, I've got a handle on tension to a degree, stitching and sort of getting into the rhythm. And I think that's one of the things I think that the chart taught really well was sometimes you have to let go of counting where the needle's going in and out and just get into the rhythm of the stitch.
Yeah.
Especially like with the Walnetto and things like that. It was, and the double fan double, it's forget about where, you know, what the instructions say, follow the rhythm of the stitch. And that was a really good instruction to have, because it makes it more enjoyable, and I think it's more natural to stitch that way.
I agree, and you know, this is something that I try to impart to all of my classes, to all of my students, to get out of the diagrams.
Yes.
To think about what the thread is doing on the back of the canvas, especially for something like a waffle stitch. That, you know, it needs to be open on the back, and that you're making an open square if it's a square waffle stitch. And I had a student in my last class who had taken a class from me in New Orleans last year at A&G, and he said he can whip through waffles now like nobody's business. He doesn't even think about them. He said, oh, a waffle stitch, and sees how big the initial first stitches need to be, and then he doesn't look anymore. He just knows how to do them. And if you can get out of the diagrams, especially for something like a Walnetto or a double fan doubled or a Jessica, just look where the endpoints need to be and then just stitch. Because the numbers, I think, can get really confusing. Was I on number 14 or was I on number 16? And then you have to count and you lose your place and your focus shifts. And I think it's much easier to stitch if you let yourself, especially with a double fan doubled, what is on the canvas is going to tell you what your needle needs to do. And so if you just trust that and do that, then it will be much easier to stitch. Now, my students don't always believe me.
Well, and I think the key word that you just said is trust, right? Because when you're starting out and you're nervous that you're gonna completely go wonky and start stitching completely crazy, you do trust the instructions and you do trust the diagram.
Right.
So to go off diagram is a little intimidating. Having a statement as simple as in the instructions, just go with the rhythm and see how it goes, is a little, it's empowering, you know, because it is something that as I was doing it, I wouldn't have thought to do, because I was so locked into, I want to do this right, so I'm going to follow the instructions to the letter. And once I read that, I looked at it differently and said, oh, you're right. This does just kind of follow sort of a circle around. So if I just keep going around the circle and start at one place, it'll just kind of work out. And, you know, I'll be honest. Sometimes I did that and said, yeah, totally didn't work that time. So, you know, rip it out and do it again. But then, you know, the second time I did it, okay, yeah, I can see where I missed a stitch or I you know, wasn't paying attention. And I think you're right. It's learning to trust your comfort level and doing more of them, right? So in doing this piece, I did one of each thing. So that's great. So I got a little bit of a taste of things. And now it's going to be, all right, now I need to do 20 of these things to really get a feel for them. And another thing for me now is, okay, the front looks okay. And I'm sure there's lots of improvement. And for me, my next step is now I want the back to look good. And
I think that's a false aspiration.
You think?
If it doesn't affect the way it looks on the front, then don't worry about the back.
Okay. Well, that takes a lot of pressure off.
Because
for me,
I carry threads across the back. If it doesn't show on the front, I just carry them over. Gary's probably twitching.
He is. I can feel it already. Right. Because for Gary and for a lot of people, having the back done neatly matters. And what I've heard a lot of people say is that if you carry too much or if you don't carry well or if they don't lay flat on the back, that when you frame something, it isn't going to frame flat.
Well, see, here again, if it doesn't affect what happens on the front, then don't worry about it. So if you have a long thread carry that affects the tension of the thread on the front, well, obviously you need to end that thread and not carry as much because it is affecting the front. But, you know, as long as you don't have knots and loops and stuff like that, because that's going to affect the tension of the stitches on the front.
Right.
Your aspiration should be to make the front beautiful, and then the back will naturally be fine.
Okay.
And then that's also the reason why you have everything finished, so no one can look at the back.
I'm so much happier right now. Well, it's true. And, you know, there is a degree of wanting to do neat work and wanting to do competent work.
Yeah.
And not having to, you know, have guests over and tell them, don't open your closet, you know, like there's a little bit of an appeal to that. But you're right. But okay. So now I'm sitting here looking at this piece and there's a lot of open canvas here. So it's easy to say it's okay to carry stitches, but when you're working on a canvas where there's big swaths of open canvas, then you cannot. You absolutely have to be on your game because everything that you do. So for a lot of this, there's just it's open canvas and it's just a grid of the very heavy krinic braid. And then each place the krinic braid crosses, it's a small little cross of a krinic metallic. And so doing those, honestly, I thought about just carrying the krinic braid and couching it. Mm-hmm. And then I felt like that was cheating. So I didn't do it then. And now looking at it back, I think I probably could have done that. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if it wouldn't have looked better.
Well, you know, just like we improve as stitchers, my directions and my instructions for my pieces evolves and improves as well. And so the things that I did earlier may not have been the exact correct thing because I've learned more since then. And so now I write my instructions a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Don't remember on Diamond Delight 10, you know, because it's been 4 or 5 years since I did that piece. I don't remember if I paid very close attention to the thread carries for an open trellis stitch or something like that. And now I do. And I instruct in my instructions, I give options that, you know, if you're not concerned about the thread carries, you can stitch it this way. But if you want to hide all of your thread carries, this is the order and direction you need to stitch.
Yes.
So I may not have done that with Diamond Delight 10. I honestly don't remember, but I do that now because I know more as a designer and as a stitcher and as a teacher how to improve. And so I put that into my instructions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, no. And again, by no means was that a criticism. I think the directions were explicit. I'm just looking at it thinking, at the level of stitching and especially with a thread that's as finicky as that can be sometimes, I wonder if adapting it that way would have been a good way. But my goal here was not to adapt anything, was to stitch it exactly as it was intended so that I could learn, because it was written the way it was for a reason. So I wanted to do it the right way, right? The way it was designed. And it's only by doing that would I learn, okay, well, this works for me. Maybe this particular way of doing something doesn't work for me, but I can adapt it this other way. And for me personally, it might work a little bit better.
Yeah.
But I won't know until I do it the designated way.
Right.
Right. So that was what this piece was.
That's like making a recipe. The first time you make a recipe, you follow it exactly. The second time you go, okay, that was too much salt. It needed a little bit more of this. I should have added this spice. And so the second time you do it, you do those things.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to do it the first way as it's written.
You need a baseline.
Yeah.
Right, right.
You need a springboard to know what can I change, what shouldn't be changed, and what could be improved.
Right. And also it tells you why it was written that way, because if you don't do it that way the first time and then change it, then when you change it, you can say, that's why they did it that way, because when I changed it, it didn't work.
Right.
So you don't really get a foundation for why the stitches are built the way they are.
Yeah. And that's something that I always try. I don't always manage it in my charts that are for sale, but in my classes, I always try to instruct what the thread carry should look like on the back, why the stitch needs to be stitched this particular way. You know, just take, for example, a double Leviathan stitch and a Rhodes stitch. On the front, they look very much the same, but because they're stitched in a different way, a Rhodes stitch is a more textured stitch because there's as much on the back of the canvas as there is on the front. And a Leviathan is stitched in a different order, and there's not as much thread on the back. So if you want that kind of a textured stitch, but you don't want it to stand up too much, you would want to use the double Leviathan. But if you want a textured stitch and you do want it to stand up in contrast to the stitches around it, you would use a road stitch.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, on the front, they're going to look pretty similar.
Right, right. So much to learn. Right. And that's the other thing, is just as many stitches as there are and as many fibers and as there are in this one single piece, it's just really just one door that's opened into, you know, a colossal amount of things, just which is exciting to me. You know, there's just so many more things to do.
Exactly. I mean, there's always something that you can learn and something interesting that you can do.
Right. And now that I don't have to worry about the backs anymore, Gary Carr.
I'm just sitting here in the fetal position in the corner. I'm fine. I'm just fine. I have a little twitch, but I'm okay. It's all right.
You have no idea how much. So I've known Gary for so long, and every hobby that we've done together, this has been sort of the carrying theme throughout, is that Gary is very regimented, very orderly. Everything is done the same way every single time. And to his credit, because things become predictable, things work very well. And I tend to be a little bit more freewheeling and easy. And, you know, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And so the idea of don't worry about things that people can't see, I know is uncomfortable.
I'm okay. You know, I'll be all right. Yeah. A little therapy, I'll be fine.
Their hobby the way they want to do it. I mean,
yes.
It brings Gary a sense of satisfaction to have the back look just as good as the front.
Yes.
And that's why he strives for that.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably more interested in what does this thread do and how does this thread behave? And, oh, look at this interesting stitch. And you're not as concerned about making the back perfect. Just like, you know, in needlework, there's a broad spectrum of what you can do. There are people that only want to cross stitch. They only want to cross stitch with DMC floss on 14 count Aida. And that's fine if that's what
Right.
And then, you know, there's people that only want to do painted canvas and they only want to use basket weave and they only want to use wool. And that's fine because it's their hobby and they get to do it the way they want to do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Whatever makes you happy. It's
exactly.
True. So I did this and then I've been sort of dabbling in a couple of other styles now because I'm not good at starting one thing and not starting other things.
Welcome to the world of stitchers because
everybody
has worked in progress.
Always, always. So, and it's fun, you know, it's fun to sort of try other, and it also helps me to talk about things if I can have a little bit of experience, you know. So, you know, we talked about crewel and for me also the history of the pieces and the history of the styles of stitchery for me personally has been very interesting.
Yes.
So, stitching a little bit of, Jacobean crewel work is interesting. And then, reading about stump work and doing some of that as well. So I started just dabbling in stump work. And Gary, I don't think you've started this yet, have you?
Nope.
Let me tell you. So this is where it's going to be tough because it is the exact opposite of this because it's a little bit of an outline and then have fun. So subjective. It's basically like painting, right? So it's a big open area and you're blending two or three different colors of threads and where you choose to blend and how you choose to blend and the lengths of the stitches is all up to you. And there's no instructions of you bring the needle up in this hole and you count five and then you put it down in that hole. It's so completely different and it's very intimidating in a way because there's no this, if you do it this way, it will be right. It's like painting, right? And I'm not a painter, so I'm trying it and I can see why people like it and I can also see why there's a lot fewer people doing it because there's a lot less of it proscribed for you. You have to make a lot more judgment on what to do.
And I think that's the difference between American stitchers and European and Australian stitchers, because the European and Australian stitchers are more comfortable doing the kinds of surface embroidery like crewel work and stump work and things like that. And American stitchers won't give me the count. I want a grid.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting because when you look at the difference between American needlework magazines, it's all counted. There's very little that's surface embroidery that's, you know, the more here's an outline and then you have fun. But the Australian and the European needlework magazines are very much more stump work, shading, you know, needle painting, crewel embroidery, surface embroidery, those kinds of things. And so it, you know, it's personally, I have done crewel work and I have done some stump work and I've done gold work and I've done several other things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care for them.
Right, right. And I can see that because it's a different area of the brain, I think, that it, and I think it's exactly what you said. What appeals to Gary about the types of designs that you do are they're orderly, right? So it's almost engineering in a sense, right? So I come from a little bit of a science and engineering background. So you can look at this and it makes sense. And if you know kind of the rules and if you follow the rhythms, it will look good. And then you can, if you choose the fabrics that are, not fabrics, but fibers that are appealing to you, you can create something that makes sense because it's on a grid. Once you're off the grid, it's really different and it's a little intimidating. So I think that's going to be interesting to sort of see how Gary's experience and my experience differ here because I keep using the word intimidating, but I feel like I don't really know what I'm doing. And this is like this I can do. And I look forward to taking classes in it just to kind of get tips on how to make it better. But things like that, I feel like somebody needs to give me an idea of, you know, give me a little bit of guidance, right?
Right. And, you know, I think maybe a better word instead of intimidating might be challenging.
Yes. Okay. That's fair. Yeah. It's because it's a totally different skill set because this is technical. Your work is technical and that is technical in a different way, but it's a lot more, I don't know.
Into interpretation.
It's interpretive. You're right.
And, you know, because I look at what Mary Corbett does and I admire it. I think it's wonderful. But that's not the kind of stitching that, and it would not, okay, so I stitch because I enjoy it, because it's relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
I love the feel of pulling the needle through the canvas and the thread following and, you know, looking and seeing, oh, look, this is what I did because, you know, you do laundry and you're never done with that. But you can look and say, oh, yes, I did this. This is what I've accomplished. And if I were to do more of the surface embroidery kinds of things that are more open to interpretation, it would not be relaxing for me.
It's not. And that's exactly what I mean. I think you've hit it perfectly. It's not relaxing at all because you're on your toes the entire time trying to figure it out.
Yeah. You know, it's like this stem stitch is just a little bit longer than that stem stitch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, split that stitch exactly right. And, you know, and it's just a difference in what you want to do. Like, the president of our EGA chapter does not like canvas at all. She doesn't like the feel of canvas. She just doesn't care for it. What she likes are the more, stump work and surface embroidery kinds of things and the, you know, stem stitches and satin stitches and things like that on fabric, not on a counted ground, but on fabric.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine because that's what she wants to stitch.
Yeah. And I think that's what's fun about it is that it's all so different, and yet we all can kind of come together and appreciate that, wow, you do that thing that I could never do or would never be enjoyable to me, but I really appreciate that what effort went into making that.
Yeah,
you know?
We can understand, you know, like people who do the painted canvases, a lot of them don't want to be involved with anything counted because mm-hmm. think, oh, I can't count, and it's not fun. And that's fine, because if what they want to do is painted canvases and that's how they experience their creativity and enjoy their needlework, I think that's fabulous.
I do, too. Because at the end, you know, so many of us, you know, myself included, this is the thing we get to do at 10 o'clock at night after work is done and kids are done and chores are done. And sometimes you want to do something that's intellectually challenging, and sometimes you just want to have the feeling of needle and thread pulling through canvas.
That's right.
And you're right. And you're not going to get that always with a piece that's going to be challenging to you. So it's we've said this before. You almost need a piece that's going to be, you know, challenging to your mind, and then a piece that's going to be soothing to your soul.
Yes.
And they aren't always the same piece.
No, they are not always the same piece. And, you know, I think that there tends to be somewhat of a snobbery, you know, well, you know, I do this, and so what I do is much more important than what you do. And I can't be so
silly.
And it annoys me because, you know, I'm going to just tell you a really brief story. I used to go to a stitching group that met at a local shop. And every year they would do an ornament exchange. And there was, the way that they did it was a dirty Santa game, you know, where
mm-hmm. yeah.
you pick one, and then if you want what somebody else has, you can get theirs, and then all this swapping is going on back and forth. Well, there was an intellectually disabled woman who came, and she stitched. And what she stitched was not exquisite. Or even very well done. But it was her stitching.
Right, right.
And I watched this woman in tears because no one wanted her piece.
Oh, and see, and that's probably the one I would have wanted, honestly.
It hangs on my tree every year. Every year
yeah.
I look at that, and I think, this woman enjoys stitching, and this was the best of her ability, and she gifted it and was proud of it, and I'm happy to have it.
Yes, because you know what she put into that, and that's what was meaningful about it.
Exactly. And, you know, it wasn't on silk gauze, and it didn't have beads, and it didn't have metallics, and it, you know, all these other things that we think elevate stitching. And we need to look at it as an opportunity to be creative and do what we enjoy, and I appreciate whatever level, whoever is stitching.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think to do otherwise is just pretentious.
I agree. Somebody put their heart into that.
Yes.
And I'm so glad that you, because I would have done exactly the same thing, because of all the pieces, that would have been the one that would have meant the most to me, because somebody really, really put a lot of effort into that and loved it.
She put just as much into that as the person who had stitched on 40 count, whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She put just as much into her piece as they
yeah.
did theirs.
Yeah. I love that. See, now that makes me want to teach kids. You know what I mean? It does. Kids or, you know, it's funny because I was thinking about that. Like, almost a non sequitur. Doing like a stitching hour at work, as if we ever get lunch hours. But that's a whole other story. But, you know, just doing a half an hour once a week, getting whoever happens to be around and just sitting and stitching. I just think that would be so nice to do because it's just a moment of calm during the day, and how nice that would be. And it wouldn't be about, you know, learning how to be the best at anything. It would just be about community, because for us, and again, on Long Island, we have guilds, but they meet at weird times. And especially, you know, for a parent who's a working parent, it's almost impossible for me to do that. So to be able to bring that into you know, we're talking about outreach,
right,
into a place where nobody does needlework, that might be kind of a fun thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I think it's really important that we expose people to needlework who would otherwise have no exposure to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this is where Gary, you traveling to trade shows, bringing needlework on planes and having be the guy on the plane doing needlework, you have a unique opportunity. So we joke about it, but I'm not even kidding, because just by the fact of being a guy doing it, you will gather attention and people will pay attention to you in the way that they wouldn't pay attention to Debbie or to me. And people will ask you questions. So you have a unique opportunity to educate people.
Okay. I'm writing this down.
Yeah, I know. See, I'm gonna convince you. I'm gonna convince you that you're gonna do this. So for many years,
I have stitched on planes, yes.
That's good. We're getting there. Because for many years we did hobbies where it was very, very predominantly men, and I was a very unusual woman in the hobby. So now the tables are turned.
Yeah.
So it's funny because Gary's like, well, I'm not going to stitch in public. I'm like, oh, really?
Well, and the thing that I find so interesting is that a lot of men who have an engineering bent to their frame of mind,
mm-hmm,
really find the geometrics appealing.
Yes.
They like the precision of it. They like the shape. And my uncle was watching me stitch one time, and, you know, of course he knew I was a designer and teacher and stitcher and all this other kind of stuff, but he had opportunity to sit and watch me stitch. And my uncle worked for IBM assigned to NASA. He worked on the space shuttle, mm-hmm, in the Apollo missions. And he was just completely fascinated by what I was doing because, mm-hmm, it looked so precise.
Yes, yes. I can completely understand that because I work in that environment as a profession, and I could see the men that I work with who are mechanical engineers and industrial engineers looking a little side-eye at it, and then, but the, again, especially pieces like this that are counted and geometric, if they were to actually sit and do it, they would really get into it because it's for exactly the reasons that it pleases Gary to do, because right, it's precise. There's reward in being perfect. You know, it's counting. It's mechanical to a degree. It's technical. It appeals to all of those things that drive those people into those careers to begin with.
Right.
So it just happens to have glitter in it, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, you know, and just because I like to use certain colors, they can change the colors. I mean.
Right. Well, and everybody needs a little extra glitter in their life. That's just.
I agree.
I'm writing all these things down. That was special. Everyone needs a little extra glitter in their lives. Okay.
It's true.
Yes. Okay. Hey, Debbie, you just got back from the seminar.
Right.
The ANG seminar. I've never been. Christine's never been. Give us a flavor. What's that like? Is it just masses of people sitting around stitching? What's a seminar like?
Okay. Well, seminar is a lot of different things, and it depends on what you want to get out of it. For the most part, people seminar to take classes. To take classes from a particular teacher, to take classes because they want to learn a particular technique. There are 24-hour stitching areas that are set up, and there's always somebody stitching. You know, we have the exhibit where you can go and see what other people have stitched. And you can see the correspondence courses, the workshops by mail. I mean, actually see the actual model and not just a picture of it. You can see the pieces that we're going to be teaching the next year at the next seminar. I went to seminar for a number of years as a student because I wanted to learn particular things, and I was not interested in being a teacher because the business model for a designer who sells her designs is completely different from the business model for a designer who is teaching at seminar and things like that. And that would be a whole nother show to talk about the differences between the two. So I went, I took gold work classes, I took stump work classes, I took, you know, lots of, you know, creative classes and all kinds of things. We have some fabulous teachers at A&G. And now to be, you know, this was my second year to go as a teacher, was really interesting because I was having dinner with the teachers who had taught me previously. Now I was a peer. And so, you know, that was really interesting to me. But when I would go to seminar, and I still do this, you go to the hotel, it's lunchtime, and you just say, hey, can I sit with you? And so you go and sit down next to some people that you don't have any idea who they are, and y'all just all talk about where they're from and what you're stitching on and whose class you're taking and what do you like to stitch. And then at the end of the lunch hour, you leave and you've got new friends. And so, you know, this to me is the best part of seminar, is to meet other stitchers from all over the country. And it's just, it's a fabulous experience. It can be quite tiring because for the most part, people do not sit and stitch for 6 to 8 hours a day. And at seminar, you're doing it for 5 to 6 days in a row.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And, you know, I can always tell at the end of my 4-day classes, my students are just kind of like, not really.
To keep any subject, any students engaged for that many hours, that many days in a row is a challenge.
And, you know, it's different working on a project in a class because the teacher says, okay, so now we're going to do waffle stitches and we're, you know, you've got this whole area of waffle stitches and there might be 20 of them, but you're only going to do one of them in class. And so you stitch a waffle stitch. Okay, now we're going to go on to the next thing. And so what you wind up with is a canvas with a little bit here, a little bit there, and threads hanging out all over. And, you know, it can really be distressing for some people.
Do people at the end of the day, do people just generally bust off to wherever and keep working on the projects? Or, I mean, I'm trying to get a picture. What's the norm?
Well, some people do that. To me, the best part of seminar is meeting and fellowshipping with people. And so, you know, there's different things. There's all these different luncheons. There's speeches. There's dinners. You know, there's a merchandise night. They've gone with a different setup for the auction now that there used to be an auction where you could buy finished needlework pieces. There's a teacher showcase night where you can go and meet teachers and see all of the projects that they have that are available to get them to come teach at your chapter. And, you know, it's just anybody who chooses to stay in their room at seminar, I think, is missing out on quite a bit because there's people there that you're going to meet. And you never know, you might find your new best friend at seminar.
Mm-hmm.
So in your description, there's a whole lot more going on than just a banquet and classes.
Yes, yes, there is a whole lot more. And, you know, we have a lot of volunteers who are doing things. We have, you know, of course, the exhibit, and we have a lot of volunteers there. And it's always exciting, the opening night of the banquet, to see the special awards that have been given to the various pieces, because they're all on easels draped with black fabric. And then they say, you know, the winner of the Jean Hilton Award, and then they undrape it. It's Curdy Biggs for Topsy Turvy. And then this big, huge ribbon with a fancy stitched center. So volunteers have stitched the centers of these ribbons.
Oh my.
And so they're all different and they're all special. And, you know, and then there's the Christmas award, and then there's the canvas embellishment award. And then, you know, and all three of the judges have their own special award that they, and it's really, you know, quite interesting to see all of these pieces and then go and view them in the exhibit and examine them and see why this particular piece was singled out for this award.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, so the exhibit is fabulous. And then there's a boutique where a needlepoint shop comes and sets up at seminar. And you can go and buy things. And I've been in countless needlepoint shops and needlework shops. Every shop has different things. And so, of course, I found things to buy at the boutique. Mm-hmm. Because that I just do.
Of course. You never know. You might not see them again. So you have to take advantage.
Yeah. And, you know, if you're a life patron of A&G, there's a special luncheon for the life patrons where they have a special speaker. And, you know, there's just like the teachers. We're members of the National Embroidery Teachers National Embroidery Teachers Association, NETA. And we have a luncheon where it's just the teachers and we talk about teacher things. And, you know, so it's really a lot of meeting people, making new friends, finding people. I went to dinner with somebody different every night.
Yeah, see, that's why I wanted to ask, because, you know, just as someone who just casually pays attention, you get the impression that, I mean, you can sign up for classes, there's this mad rush, you know, to get in on a class. And I just get this impression that people show up and go to these classes and have lunch and dinner and stitch in the evening, and then there's a banquet, and then you go home. And that's clearly not an accurate picture of what goes on there. There's clearly, it sounds to me like I could not take any classes and have a very full.
Yeah.
There are, you know, especially like the host chapters. They are the ones who are manning the exhibit and volunteering and, you know, helping the teachers. And then we also have an endowment fund. And so they're working with that. And there are a lot of volunteers that come to seminar and never take a class. And there's even a class called Studio Time where you go and bring your own project and work independently. So, and they have a teacher there to offer advice and stuff like that. But, you know, you get out of seminar what you want to get out of seminar. What I want to get out of seminar is meeting other people and taking care of a lot of, you know, networking kinds of things with the other teachers, with the volunteers, with the board members, all kinds of stuff. You know, if you're an active member of a chapter, there is a meeting for chapter presidents, and, you know, where they talk about issues that are facing the various chapters and how to handle the challenges there. They have a special meeting for first-timers so that they can tell them about all the things that are going to happen at seminar and how to get the most out of seminar. It's a fabulous opportunity.
Now I'm interested.
Yeah.
You taught two classes?
I taught a two-day class and a four-day class.
So you're exhausted, is what you're saying.
It gets pretty tiring. But I had excellent classes. I had wonderful students. My four-day class may have been the best class I've ever taught. Everybody got a lot of stitching done. I didn't have anybody who couldn't keep up. And everybody was really working away. And so, you know, it was a great experience for me as the teacher to have such a great class.
And so, go ahead.
I was going to say, can you tell us a little bit, just a tiny bit, about the two pieces that you taught?
Yes. My two-day class was called Ablaze. And I designed it based on a log cabin quilt concept. But instead of doing it like with a center square, I did it with a corner motif that included layered crescents and Maltese interlacing and some Bargello and herringbone square and stuff like that. And so that was in the corner. And then around it, I had seven bands, vertical and horizontal bands. And I based it on an analogous color scheme on the color wheel. So it was yellow, orange, red, magenta.
Mm-hmm.
Very bright. That's why I called it Ablaze. And my four-day class was called Divisions. And that was based on an abstract painting I had seen where there were several shapes and divisions in this. I don't know the name of the piece. I couldn't tell you who the artist was. It just made an impression on me. And so I divided into a bunch of different areas and then put some what I thought would be interesting stitches in these different divisions. And that was my four-day class. That was the one with the six-layered Jessica. But it also had a huge four-color double fan doubled right in the center. And, other things that I thought would be of interest, some other stitches and things like that. And that one was offered in a Southwest color scheme of ecru, beige, turquoise, with some darker browns. And then I also offered it in peacock colors.
Mm.
Green, blue, a little bit of gold, a little bit of black.
So when I sign up for one of your classes, then part of what you have to do is put together kits for each student.
Yes.
I mean, you put together everything and ship it out, and then I just show up with a needle and a pair of scissors, and I'm set to go.
Well, usually you'll get a letter from the teacher before seminar begins to tell you, you need to bring this size stretcher bars. Be sure you bring your tacks. You'll need a laying tool. You'll need bring lights if you need them, magnification if you need it. And I've had some other classes that had a very eclectic list of supplies that we needed to bring, like a box of crayons and water paints and an apron so we didn't get our clothes dirty and various other things. So, you know, you get a list from the teacher to tell you what to bring to class, and then you get your kit once you're at seminar.
Okay. All right. And people must show up with stands or table stands?
Yeah.
Or any?
Oh, yeah. Table stands, floor stands, whatever they can fit in their suitcase. And I'm sure that the people flying in that they're, you know, the TSA agents. What on earth? But yeah, they bring all kinds of stuff. And we always make sure that every student has plenty of room in class so that they can spread out and build. Mm.
Yeah.
That's good.
Okay. See, I wanted you to paint a picture because, I mean, I have these perceptions, but if I have them, then that means, you know, Christine has them and a lot of other
right.
people do. And I think for a lot of people that seminar is almost, if I can say, intimidating in that it, you know, I got to believe people think it operates at a level they can't attain, so they don't go. And it sounds to me like that's what's in people's minds, that's dead wrong.
That's exactly right, because you're going to take a class so you can learn more about how to do what you enjoy doing. And, you know, like gold work, I've taken several gold work classes, and I have learned that I don't particularly care for gold work. I've had excellent teachers, and I'm glad that I was exposed to the technique. I've taken classes in Japanese embroidery. I've taken classes in pulled work and things like that. And I learned something in every class I've taken. I have always learned something. Sometimes I learn I don't ever want to take a class with that teacher again, but you know,
right.
I,
but that's fair.
I learned something, and everybody teaches differently. And it's surprising what each student is going to take away from the class because, you know, for the most part, we're all self-taught. We bought a project, we got the materials, we sat down all by ourselves in our house, all by ourselves, and went through the project.
That's true. I'm glad you brought up it. There's no rule that says that just because you took a class in something, you have to like it. And
right.
one of the sort of lessons I've had to kind of go over with my son several times is, the reason you go to school is because you don't know something. So you can't walk into something expecting that you're going to know how to do it.
Exactly. And, you know, and it's perfectly fine to take a class and never finish the project. If, you know, I've taken classes like that where I wanted to learn something specific that was being taught in that class, came home, took the project off of the stretcher bars, threw it away, put the threads in my moved on.
No, you're supposed to keep it on the stretcher bars for years and then
And then feel guilty about it the entire time.
No. And, you know, you get out of seminar, everybody gets out of seminar different things. And that's fine because, you know, there's a wide variety of classes. And you're supposed to kind of judge the level, you know, this is a beginner class, this is advanced, this is an intermediate class. But nobody ever does that. They look at the project, say, oh, I want to take this project. Whether they're advanced, beginner, intermediate, or whatever. And we deal with it.
The exhibit, pretty impressive. I mean, that's got to be one piece of perfection after another there.
Yes. And, you know, there's some pieces that I didn't care for, but there are quite a few others that I just absolutely loved. The Needlepoint Millennial group.
Oh, those kids. Oh, that's a story and a half, isn't it?
They had a huge display because we were in the Los Angeles area.
Yep.
And so they were invited to put their pieces in our exhibit. And so I really took a lot of pleasure out of seeing what kids were doing.
Yeah, that's one of the great stories. That teacher who has kids, yes. Boys and girls.
Yes.
Yeah, and she's really got something going there. That's impressive.
He won a stitching ribbon for his piece in the exhibit.
Oh, how great is that?
That's pretty great. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, then it's just meeting people and talking to people. And I know people all over the country. When I see names come up on Needlepoint Nation, I met them at seminar.
Mm-hmm.
I know who they are.
All right. So now next year is in D.C. in late August, right? Are you teaching there? Do you know yet?
A one-day class and a four-day class.
Okay. And that's right. You have to get your design together even ahead of this seminar.
Yes.
Yeah.
The submission deadline for 2019 is January.
Oh, my.
So, you know, that takes a lot to come up with a piece, stitch the model, get it ready, submit it to the committee that's going to decide, and then do nothing with it for a year and a half.
So these are one day and 4 day. They're new designs again, or
yes, these are previously untaught designs. That's one of the requirements for seminar. You can offer an encore piece that may have been taught before, especially if it's extremely popular. But for the most part, these are all brand new projects that have never been taught before.
And we're about out of time here. I wanted to make sure we got in. Now, your mystery retreat project you're offering online, but then this will air Sunday, and it looked to me like the cutoff was Friday before, right?
Right, but if somebody is interested, they should go ahead and contact us because, you know, the way we have to order supplies, I may have 10 that I need to make up in my colorway, but I would actually have enough materials to do another 2 or 3.
Okay.
Because of, you know, there's 12 skeins in a box and, you know, this and that and the other thing. And so if someone is interested, they should go ahead and contact us and we'll get them registered. And especially if they just want the instructions and we will, because we'll print more books, and we'll help them come up with a color scheme, you know, or because some people just want the instructions and they're going to come up with their own color scheme out of threads that they have in stash or, you know, to match their home decor or to stitch with colors that they like or whatever. And that's fine. And we will help them with that.
Okay. So Needle Art Mystery Retreat, we talked about, we had all four of you on for a show. So you can get involved in that, even though you couldn't come to Chicago. Just contact them, and I'll put a link on the page for the podcast to it as soon as I find that link. I just noticed somewhere today that the deadline was Friday. So the deadline's Friday, but you can still get in.
And they need to contact us, and we'll see what we can do. It's through the Shining Needle Society. That's who we're working with. We're partnered with them for our cyber classes. And we're going to be offering probably 2 of our previous projects a year through Shining Needle Society. So that if you missed one, you'd still have a chance to get it.
Do we have dates yet for the 2018 seminar?
They should be on the website. It will be a little bit earlier than it was this year, and it will be a 5-day seminar. It will be Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, which is a change from what we've done previously. And they also are changing the registration process to be, you can register online, you can register by mail, and they'll have all of the classes pictured and all the, and if you register online, it will be first come, first served, instead mm-hmm. of taking registrations and then seeing if a class filled and then going to lottery. And you will know immediately if you register online if you got the class or not. So I think it's a really positive change.
Yeah.
I think people will be pleased with that. I know there's been some consternation about it, but so very few classes go to lottery that I think people will pretty much be able to get the class that they want. Fingers crossed, hope.
Yeah, let's see how that goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, I was glad to hear that they were going that route, because I always thought it was kind of strange to do the lottery thing, and because every now and then you hear somebody, oh, I really wanted that class and I couldn't get it. And
yeah, 1 year I didn't get any of my first choices, and I wound up with 3 Goldwork classes, which I would never have registered.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
So, you know, I think being able to know immediately if you got the class you wanted or not, I think it's going to be a very positive thing.
Yeah, yeah. All right, we got to wrap up here. What's your next? What's the next design you're releasing to the retail world?
Okay, I have just finished.
We got to get a plug in. We got to get a plug in. So here it is.
Okay. Well, I have just finished stitching 3 cross stitch Halloween ornaments that I'm going to release as a leaflet, hopefully next week. And then the next thing I'm working on are going to be 3 Christmas ornaments, snowflake Christmas ornaments on perforated paper, which hopefully I'll get that done in the next couple of weeks. And then I also have already, I've already finished, I just don't have the leaflet together, 4 designs for the DMC stitchable cuffs. And so I'm hoping to get that leaflet ready to go. And so I've got 3 things that I'll be coming out with in very short order.
That's exciting. Paper, that, I've never done that. That's fun to do, challenging, or is it just kind of a pleasant?
There are a few little things you have to do. You can't split any stitches. They have to be full stitches. But I like it for ornaments because you don't have to bind the edges of it. You can cut the paper right up close to the edge of the stitching, and you don't have to, you know, fiddle around with wrapping the edges of the fabric or, you know, binding the edges of the fabric in any way. You just cut it.
Hmm. Fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, fun. Okay.
I think so.
Yeah. And you don't see that very, see paper very often. Is that pretty easy to get?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
They have it at, you know, the big box stores like Hobby Lobby and Michaels, but then a lot of paperwork stores will have it as well.
Now you see, you got me curious now. Is there, I assume there are different grades of stitching paper? Does it matter?
I've only seen 14 count, but there may be different count. I've only seen 14, but they do, it does come in a wide variety of colors, and I'm stitching on gold and silver perforated paper.
Hmm. That sounds like fun. So you just, you just trim it off close to the stitching and then glue something on the back to cover up the back and you're done with it. Hang a ribbon and you're good.
Or not.
Or not. Okay.
Don't worry about the back, Gary, remember?
Well, yeah. And, you know, or another thing that you could do is to stitch 2 and then glue them together.
Oh,
And that way you'd have a reversible front and back. You know, you can do reversible cross stitch, which I'm not going to do for an ornament.
No.
Gonna mess with it.
Nicola Parkman was working on something here. I encountered her several weeks ago. A reproduction sampler that was reversible, and like, holy smokes, that looked like a lot of work.
Yeah,
I know. No, I can't foresee me doing anything that would be reversible. Not to say I would never do anything that was reversible, but at this point, I can't see it.
Yep.
And then the other things that I'm going to be working on are several different new teaching projects. So, because I got to get ready for proposals.
Yes. Yes. All right, Debbie, that's it. This has been fun, as always. A lot of fun. Good stuff. Thank you.
Well, I always enjoy talking to both of you.
Thank you.
Christine and I kind of cut you out of the conversation early on.
It's okay.
I was a little excited about finishing my piece, so I apologize.
Did it get done?
Enthusiasm. It did get done. So
yay.
Diamond Delight is in the books, my very first piece. So
yay.
Forgive my enthusiasm about finishing my very first piece. So it's done.
If we were in our stitching group that meets at the local shop, when someone finishes, they hold it up and we all say, ta-da!
All right, we'll do that. I'll make an Instagram post and that will be the caption for it. So.
Okay.
We'll do our virtual version of that.
Okay, excellent.
All right, that's it. Thanks to everybody for listening. Thank you, Debbie, and we'll be back on Wednesday.
Yes, take care.